It's really good to welcome you here today. As I said, we're having 2 weeks on what in the Church of England we call stewardship and everyone else calls fundraising, because we have to focus on these sorts of important issues, and we do this sort of once a year. I want to really look at that little passage about the church in Corinth that we've just had, and to look at a few general principles, not just about financial giving, but more broadly about what we give. Here's a picture of the church in Corinth. Has anyone ever been to Corinth? Okay, great. Anyone ever been to Athens? Okay, all right, one or two. Right, it's not far from Athens, about 60 miles away from Athens, so it's in Greece. And it was a fairly thriving kind of city. And it was a city that, not dissimilar to Leeds, not as big as Leeds, but kind of like that, you know, like finances going on and travel going on and all that kind of stuff. And what had happened was that the church in Jerusalem, which is where the church started, had become quite poor. And so a number of churches, including the church in Corinth, had been asked by Paul to help them financially. And they'd started giving, and he's writing here to remind them about that, to encourage them to give. And I suppose the very simple idea here is that Corinth had lots of money and Jerusalem didn't, so they were sharing. And Paul, earlier in the chapter, talks about the importance of equality. In other words, he recognizes that he wants churches to kind of be equal, on an equal footing before God. But he also says that it might come that one day it'll be the tides will be turned, and actually you'll need help from other churches. But that's what is going on here. And so we turn to the passage in question, and he talks about the importance of giving. And I just want to draw a couple of principles from that. And the first question really is how we give. How we give. And it really is about our actions and attitudes towards giving. And he says there's this very famous verse in this chapter, and it goes something like this: those who sow generously will also reap generously. This is quite possibly the most misquoted verse in the whole Bible. One of them, certainly, because it's often used to say, if you give lots of money to church, God's going to make you rich. And it's all around the world it's used in that way. If you give money to church, God's going to make you rich. And that's really not what it's saying. Because what it's saying, actually, is that this church needs your support. And if we're prepared to invest in God's work, that we will be repaid, we'll have something repaid to us, but in a kind of different way. That it's a way that actually is full of sort of maturity in being a Christian and in things that I suppose are really deeply meaningful and really actually are the things that really matter. So it's quite different from saying you give money to church and somehow God's going to make you rich. It doesn't work like that. That's not what this is saying. But it's a really important idea that we are called to be generous with in our lives. And the picture on the left there, that you've got the elephant being generous to the little cat. And you get the idea that we are called to be generous. I've been challenged in the last week because we have got, obviously, our guests who are staying here. And all of them, they pretty much own a bag with some clothes in and a mobile phone and nothing else. So each church that hosts them, and this church is right up until next June, I think, hosting them in Leeds. They buy them a bus pass, a weekly bus pass, which we buy. And then they have a bus pass to go anywhere in West Yorkshire. We have meal in the morning and in the evening. But actually, they get nothing from the government. This is what we call destitute refugees or asylum seekers. They're out of the system. No financial support, no housing, nothing. And it's a real challenge to me as I reflect on that. These people are traveling light, literally. Just like Jesus' family would have traveled light when they got away from Herod and they were refugees. They were traveling really, really light. Not by choice, but they were traveling light. And I think about all the stuff that I've got. All the stuff I've got. Think about, you know, I live in a nice house and I drive this amazing car. You know, it's got power steering. It's got electric windows. Sometimes the boot even opens. I mean, it's amazing, you know. It's pretty much theft-proof because who would want to steal a Honda Jazz 2005? You know, it's got all these features. But the point is, I've got everything I need. I've got multiple pairs of shoes. I've got clothes. You know, I go on holidays every year. I have great... I've just got everything I need. And yet here, we have these gentlemen who are coming and staying who have nothing. Now, it's a little bit different from this passage. This is talking about the church sharing with the church. All of our guests are Muslim who are coming in. All of the guys that we have staying with us are Muslim. But it's the same principle of being called to give. Now, again, we sow into their lives, and we receive something back that's different. If you come in and you get that sense of the generosity of the community and the church, there's something amazing. There's a sort of atmosphere that's really significant. And we've had a few kids come in just because they've come in with family. And kids are very perceptive, aren't they? And they picked up on it straight away. One child said to me, "Oh, I like the atmosphere here. I like the atmosphere." I wonder if you can guess which kid that was. But you get the idea, don't you, that when you're in that context where there's generosity, there's something really positive about it. I suppose the cold, hard reality is this, that when we are able to welcome refugees or anyone in like that, you know, it costs. It costs. I don't know what it's going to cost the heating, but the heating is going to probably be about £800 extra for the fortnight, I would guess. Heating a church like this, man, this is, you know what I mean? This is not built to retain heat. And so it's just, and the point is that that giving comes from the congregation. All our giving in church pretty much comes from the congregation. Particularly if you're new or newish, it's hard to get your head around, but it's not the Church of England out there just with all this money spending, you know what I mean? It all comes from us. And so when we do things like that, when we do barn babies, or when we go into the school, or when we put on Christmas performances, or we have services on a Sunday, or we do wedding funerals and all that kind of thing, most of the money comes from the congregation. And the reality is that that's something that we need to really think about in terms of that sowing. But that's what we're actually sowing into. The second thing that Paul says here, he talks about being generous, doesn't he? He talks about being cheerful in your giving. God loves a cheerful giver. And I want to think about giving in the broader sense of that. Do you know what it's like when you're in a situation where, you know, there's people who it's just a bit hard to be generous, to be cheerful with? Maybe you don't have anyone in your life like that. Maybe you're all just super, super well-adjusted and it's all just wonderful. But I find, you know, just occasionally, there's people who think, oh, I'm not so keen on being as cheerful as I could be with others. And we're in situations where we're stressed and we're not that cheerful. Okay. Well, that is the challenge here, is that actually we're called to, in fact, be cheerful in the way that we live our lives. And the point is that our attitude towards giving is important. What we give is important, but our attitude is important as well. So if we're people who give grudgingly, I've got to give, it's like extracting, you know. If there's an extraction process that has to go on, that's not how it's supposed to be. That there's supposed to be a joy in giving and a freedom in giving. And I think some of that's what we've experienced in the generosity that people have from the community and elsewhere in terms of those guests that we have at the moment. There is a kind of a cheerfulness in giving. And that's actually how it's meant to be in the way that we live our lives. Because what we recognize is that actually God has pretty unlimited resources will be, you know, is able to deal with things and situations. But we are called to give in a very particular way, and that is to be cheerful about it. I don't want to, you know, gloss over the fact that it's painful, and for many people it's very sacrificial to give. I understand that. But there is also a joy in giving, because in the process of giving, somehow it puts us in a different situation. It challenges our values, doesn't it? And it makes us step out in faith even. Because if we are prepared to give, then we have to assume that God is going to, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I read recently about people who are very wealthy. And one of the really quirky things about people who are quite wealthy is often they're quite anxious people. There is a link between anxiety and doing well financially. I don't know if you've met many people who are really successful financially, but quite often there's an edge to them. They're edgy in the way that they do things. And if you push beyond the basic level of, you know, what you find is that they're, you know, part of their mentality is that you stockpile so that you're okay. Because what if something goes wrong? And this idea that Paul is suggesting is that actually we're to challenge that idea and to say, I'm going to live my life in a way that, sure, we've got enough for ourselves, but we don't have that stockpiling mentality. Others, of course, are suffering with debts and other issues like that, and we need to be very sensitive to that. You know what I mean? We're all in different situations. But for some of us, there is a challenge to actually live a little bit more simply so that we can be a little bit more generous. And that's not just in terms of church. That's more broadly than that. Because God does have unlimited resources to share. And I would just want to share a story from one of my favorite films. This is a film called Schindler's List. I don't know if any of you have seen the film, but it's about a guy called Oskar Schindler, who is a playboy business, sort of German businessman leading up to World War II in Nazi Germany. And he was really, really well-connected, I think in Berlin, super well-connected. And he worked out pretty early what was going on. And even though he was a successful German businessman, he decided he had to do something. So what he did was he employed lots of Jewish people in his factory. And he created a factory, a business, that he said, I'm going to make pots and pans for the army. And so I'm going to take, you know, whatever it is, aluminium or what is it, metal, steel even, and I'm going to turn them into pots and pans because the army will need pots and pans. But as it goes on, as the film goes on, what you realize is that he's not making any money. He's using all his money to save the lives of these Jewish people. And so they are coming in, and he's bribing all the officials, all the German officers, and he's saying, you know, I really need, these people have specialist skills to be able to do this work. And by the end of it, he's virtually bankrupt. And actually, in real life, he was bankrupted through the whole process. And so he just kept spending more and more and more and more and more money. And at the end, you know, he wasn't making money. He was losing money all the time. But at the end of it, there's all these people's lives who have been saved. The very final scene in that film is unbelievably heart-wrenching and inspiring, because they have real-life survivors, Jewish people, who were on Schindler's List, because the list is the list of people that get on his company payroll. That's the list. And there was thousands of people. Some of them were real survivors, and then their children and their grandchildren, and they all head towards this memorial, and I think actually it was his grave. And just there's just loads and loads of these people. And of course, the reality is that not just for those families, but the following generations, they were all, you know, they were there because of Schindler, because of what he did, because otherwise they would have died. It's a really quirky way of looking at wealth, isn't it? But he decided that he had a bigger picture and a bigger goal. And I suppose that's the model in the church, that we have a slightly bigger goal and a different way of seeing the world. Schindler had a radically different way of seeing the world than what was going on around him. And we also are called to have a radically different way of seeing the world and to invest in ways that the world sees as being maybe a bit foolish, actually. I know there's lots of you here who are really generous in your giving, and that's great. But it's just an interesting take on what Jesus did. Jesus comes down from heaven into the world to be amongst the poor, really, didn't he? That was his goal. He chose, instead of being up there, down here. And that's the whole flipped way of the Christian world sees how we live. It's all flipped around. And so when we think about our giving, what we're fundamentally thinking about is we're thinking about what we're giving to support those kinds of ministries, like what we're doing at the moment with the night shelter, but also with other ministries as well. And we're thinking about what a difference that we make in the world. Now, each year we have these sort of series, and I always have a slightly different approach, and I thought I'd just be really straightforward this year about it and just explain what we're looking at, what we're aiming for, and what I do. Personally, what I do, I've always done it from when I was, I don't know, I suppose started working, or maybe 17 or whatever, when I started understanding about giving. I've always just given 10% of my income. It goes back about 3,000 years. It's called tithing, back to the Old Testament. Now, it's not necessarily the way to do it. I'm not suggesting that. It's just that it's worked for me. That's what I've always done. And quite a lot of people here do that as well. In other words, if I make a certain percentage, what I do is 10% of my income goes to the church, and then on top of that, if I support other charities, I give whatever it is. So it works out somewhere between 10 and 15% of my income. So it's sort of whatever, several thousand pounds a year goes. And then it's gift-aided, which means that it then bumps up by 20% as well. Here's what I'm aiming for, really. For some people, you think, wow, that's a lot, 10%. Well, remember, it's proportional to income, so If you don't make a lot, then it's a smaller amount. But we're aiming to either say, that would be great if people can aim for that, 10%. But what I'd love is for 75% of those who come to church to give at least 5% via standing order so we know what's coming in. That's what we're aiming for, okay? At least 75% to give 5% of income to church via standing order. And then we actually know what's coming in each week and we can budget accordingly. Because, as I said earlier, the church costs £2,000 a week to run. Did you realize it was that much? And it's not coming from the great big Church of England. It's actually coming from us and from our giving and from also from renting out the barn and all that kind of stuff. In other words, all the ministries, church, community, school, whatever else, it all comes out of that. And we never really make a profit. We always do it in such a way that, you know, a little bit might carry over, but we're not about profit. We are about serving the community. That's the challenge, really, to think about how we do that. The good news is that the whole process of doing this is really, really faith-building in our lives, just in the same way as this little church this church in Corinth was asked to support the church in Jerusalem. We are just being asked to support other churches as well. So the system in the Church of England is that if you live in a place like Hare Hills, for example, in the middle of Leeds, and it's a pretty poor place. Does everyone know where Hare Hills is? The church there is fairly small, although physically it's about the biggest church in Leeds, but small congregation. They don't have a lot of income. They work a lot with refugees and asylum seekers. They don't have people on income, big incomes. And so what happens is that the money that we actually make or comes in, some of that subsidizes churches in places like Hare Hills. It's just straight out of this reading from Corinthians. It's exactly the same. So what happens there is that it was Corinth paying for Jerusalem. We will, as our share particularly goes up, will be paying for places like other places. That's how it works. In other words, it's leveled across. It's a level playing field. Well, kind of level playing field. Because we've got loads here, you know. That's just how it works. The really exciting thing is that actually it's incredibly important for faith and faith building. That to a certain extent, until people get to that point where they're prepared to give sacrificially, you know, that is a major point of maturity in the Christian faith. That's something to bear in mind, that we step out in faith. Because suddenly we think, you know, God's going to provide for me, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And quite a few times I've had experiences where I've given money, and I haven't become a millionaire as a result of it. But, you know, exactly the same amount has come back to me the following week. I mean, quite remarkable. Like, I've written out a check for £1,000 and given it to something or someone. And the next week, someone has sent me a check for £1,000. I kid you not. Do you know, when we step out in faith, not just about the church, but maybe there's other causes that you support. When we step out in faith, something happens to us. Our priorities start to change. And it's not just about us and about money, but about something bigger, a bit like Schindler and his list. And I think that's the message for us today, that it's exciting. And the ministry that we do as a church is all linked in with our giving. And so the goal is to get everyone on board, particularly those perhaps who are a bit newer to church, to understand this and to start sort of getting to that point of really being prepared to make those steps of faith. I know it sounds a bit dull and even a bit tricky talking about these sorts of issues, but I think it's better just to be upfront about it and say, this is what we do and this is who we are, than to not talk about it. And I think it's better not to put people on guilt trips either and just to say, well, just this is the reality. And we just pray that you'll be able to go away and think and pray about that. Next week, we're going to have some sort of information and leaflets that should have been here this week, but things have taken over from this week in different ways and it hasn't happened. But there'll be very simple instructions in terms of what you can do in regards to giving. So let's have a quick prayer, and then I'm going to hand over to Pauline again. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much that you give us loads and loads and loads. Thank you for all that you've given us. Thank you just for the fact that I drive a fabulous car, that I live in a lovely warm house, that I live in a nice place surrounded by wonderful people, just that you give us so much. And I pray, Lord, that not just in terms of church, but generally speaking, we can have that attitude of generosity and cheerfulness in our giving, whether it's in terms of time, working in our workplace, or maybe in our community, whether it's in terms of our finances. We just pray that you'd help us and challenge us in terms of our attitudes towards this important theme and this important idea. In Jesus' name, amen.